love a good nurture? Am I right?
Right.
You hit the streets bearing your pride and something just feels so good about it. The best place to start is at the Mary and Blake store. We've got all the best fandom items you can imagine from all the podcasts that we cover. So you can head on over to themaryandblakestore.com to see and find what is your best fit. Welcome to the Potterverse from Providence, Rhode Island. It's a podcast dedicated to the book and film universe of Harry Potter. So grab your favorite wands and time turners. Let's step into the night and pursue that flighty temptress adventure. Welcome. My name is Mary Larson. I love to ad lib.
Just can never get it right. Just can never get it right.
I get it right 99% of the time.
I'd say 95. Maybe. Okay. Maybe 95. Well, my name is Blake.
Yeah,
and
it sure
the
is.
Thing I realized, the thing mm-hmm. I just totally reaffirmed for me. Mm-hmm. I love me some Tom Riddle.
I know, and I'm glad that you dressed up as him for Halloween.
Yeah, me too, because that was apropos.
Also like the easiest costume for you. Ever.
Well, yeah. I mean, why wouldn't it be, right?
Dark hair, wear a Slytherin.
Hey, just Slytherin be careful scarf, with the microphone. Be careful with the microphone.
You're good to go, man. You are good to go. So, of course, this is the chapter, The Heir of Slytherin, where we get to spend quite a lot of time with Mr. Tom Riddle. And I wanted to just hang with him for a second. Mm-hmm. Now, Harry, I'm going to teach you a little lesson. Let's match the powers of Lord Voldemort, heir of air, not hair. I'm Burgundy.
Air. I'm on Burgundy.
It's like the title of this chapter.
Yes.
Let me start over.
Let's just rewind.
Now, Harry, I'm going to teach you a little lesson. Let's match the powers of Lord Voldemort, heir of Salazar Slytherin, against famous Harry Potter and the best weapons Dumbledore can give him. He cast an amused eye over Fox and the Sorting Hat, then walked away. Harry, fear spreading up his numb legs, watched Riddle stop between the high pillars and look up into the stone face of Slytherin, high above him in the half-darkness. Riddle opened his mouth wide and hissed, but Harry understood what he was saying. Speak to me, Slytherin, greatest of the Hogwarts Four. Harry wheeled around to look up at the statue, Fox swaying on his shoulder. Slytherin's gigantic stone face was moving. Horror-struck, Harry saw his mouth opening, wider and wider, to make a huge black hole. And something was stirring inside the statue's mouth. Something was slithering up from its depths. Harry backed away until he hid in the dark chamber wall. And as he shut his eyes tight, he felt Fox's wings sweep his cheek as he took flight. Harry wanted to shout, "Don't leave me." But what chance did a phoenix have against the King of Serpents? Something huge hit the stone floor of the chamber, and Harry felt it shudder. He knew it was happening. He could sense it. Could almost see the giant serpent uncoiling itself from Slytherin's mouth. Then he heard Riddle's hissing voice. Kill him.
Great job, Mary. Good pick. You picked an incredible passage.
Thank you.
Because it shows you the kind of power and confidence that Riddle has. But it's the conversations, it's the arrogance that mm-hmm. Tom Riddle has.
Yes.
How he is, again, as we've talked about throughout this entire run of the Chamber of Secrets, he is the opposite of Harry.
Yes.
In so many ways. Yet he is Harry's copy in so many ways, too.
Yeah, like his foil.
Yeah, well, his foil, but they have so many similarities,
yes.
Yet they are so different. And those are the things that I love. And I think we'll get into that in a little bit, but one of the things that stood out to me was how Riddle casually leaned against one of the columns.
Yeah.
That is just a special bit of writing. And, mm-hmm. and again, we'll get into that in a little bit. But yeah, so we'll do that. Of course, Mary, What do we have to tell all of our listeners?
Well, we want to remind you that you can find Blake and I on all sorts of social media. You can head to maryandblake.com to find all of our podcasts and blogs. We're currently podcasting about This Is Us on NBC. The Crown comes back to Netflix in a week and a half, I want to say. And Blake and I will be doing a special podcast about season 4 of The Crown. It's going to be binge. It's going to be like you can Netflix and listen, or you can binge 3 episodes and listen to 3 episodes. Those podcast episodes of The Crown, Keep Calm and Crown On, are only available to our patrons, our friends at jointhenerdclan.com, which is a very, very special community to Blake and I. It's for people who support the podcast that Blake and I do, where they can pay as little as much as $2 a month. It's less than a cup of coffee at this point, to really continue and make sure this is happening. So if Blake and I, if any of our podcasts bring some lumos in your time of Knox, please feel free to contribute at jointhenerdclan.com, where there's also... Blake, how close are we to our challenge of you wearing a Hufflepuff shirt and just like proclaiming love for all things Puff?
We're a little bit off. We're a little bit off. I'd say we got about 10 to 15 more.
Okay.
Members that have to join at jointhenerdclan.com.
So let's make this happen.
Come on, Puffs. Come on, Puffs. Let's go.
They can do it. They can do it. All right, let's get into the show.
Let's do it.
I solemnly swear that I'm up to no good.
Here we are in chapter 17, the second to last chapter in the Chamber of Secrets. Its title once again is The Heir, not the Hare, of Slytherin. And in this chapter, Harry is in the chamber. He finds unconscious Ginny. He meets Tom Riddle, and Tom Riddle tells him all about how he's been possessing Ginny and doing all these terrible things. Harry and Tom fight, but really it's not a fight. It's just the basilisk comes after Harry, Fox the Phoenix comes, a sorting hat comes, a sword comes out of the sorting hat, Harry kills the basilisk bites Harry, Fox cries, a lot of things happen, and Tom Riddle disappears because Harry takes the Fang and smushes the diary. Holy smokes.
Yes.
This chapter.
So what do you think?
Well, action-packed.
Yeah, and you know, it's funny, as action-packed as it is, it's also so very talky.
Yeah.
Talk. So much talking happening.
This is the bad guy monologue time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you knew all along, Harry Potter.
I know we've used this example quite a bit, but I'm going to use it again. This is almost the architect moment from The Matrix Reloaded, when Neo and the architect sit in that room and just talk for about a good 15 minutes.
Yeah.
That broke that film.
Oh, gosh.
I don't know, especially in the book, if this breaks the book.
I would not say that this breaks the book at all.
I would say so, too, specifically because it is a book. Your recollection of the film, though, Mary, how do you think this played out in the film?
No, I really liked it because, you know, we got to meet Tom Riddle earlier and we got to have this kind of version of going through the diary and having this memory and having this revelation that it is Voldemort. I mean, it didn't take me out of it. But mind you, I've already been a Harry Potter lover.
That's
true. By the time I saw this movie, and I was so excited. It's a lot. It's a lot at once. It's a lot of action. It's a lot of dialogue. But I'm down with it because it moves quickly. You're like ready. By this point, you're ready to wrap things up. You feel the last pages of the book.
Yeah, I think there's an inherent momentum to the conversation because things are being revealed to Harry. What I love most about this is that the entire function of the book is totally changed. The whole function of the book for this entire time.
The book meaning the diary?
No, the book itself.
The book, The Chamber of Secrets.
The Chamber of Secrets.
Okay.
The whole function, thank you for that, for clearing that up.
No problem.
The function of the Chamber of Secrets up until this point has been killing mudbloods. And in one short sentence, Tom Riddle takes that entire expectation and just says, Not what I'm here for. I don't care about mudbloods. This has everything to do with you. Everything that has transpired is for you.
Yeah.
For you, Harry, of course. I love that. I love the guts that the author has to take that and say, nope, everything you've read is just out the window.
Yep.
This is much more personal, much more specific. It's much more about Harry's exceptionalism than anybody could have desired.
And how incredible that Harry was the one spending all this time and energy trying to get to the bottom of the Chamber of Secrets. This is really, once again, a key trait of Harry's being Gryffindor, that he wants to solve this mystery. He wants to make Hogwarts safe again, because he could have just been like any other student, you know, just focusing on their exams or being worried or, you know, whatever, just playing in the lobby room or snogging. I don't know. But Harry instead spends his time with his friends trying to get to the bottom of this. Yep. And it's because of his urgency. It's because he doesn't want to have to live with the Dursleys again. It's that unique bond that he and Tom Riddle have, where they truly are orphans and Hogwarts is their home. And because of that, Harry is forced to take this on.
Tammy on Facebook here says, yes, Blake, much like the garrison commander in Outlander season one, very talky. And for those of you who are Outlander fans, you know exactly what Tammy is talking about. But yes, exactly. Blackjack and Claire in that episode are fighting for the same thing. They want the same thing. They're just doing it in two very different ways. And there is an inherent tension about that goal. There's an inherent back and forth. There's deception. There's a relief of that deception. There's a physical act that changes the very fabric of that entire scene. Mm-hmm. It all comes together in that one moment in the Garrison Commander, and the same exact thing. You could almost, I bet you, if you sat down and took a look at this and broke it down, you could, I bet you this is an exact mirror. This conversation is an exact mirror of what occurred in Outlander season one for the episode of the Garrison Commander between Claire and Blackjack.
Ooh, look at you.
I bet. And that's why I think this works, because it's two people who are revealing themselves to each other. One thinks they have the upper hand. Mm-hmm. One thinks that they have the upper hand. They're moving back and forth between. It's excellent. Yes. Excellent. Excellent. And it may be talky, but it's good talky. Good talky.
Truly. You know, There were some other things that I just truly loved about this chapter. Bringing out, once we realize that Riddle is Lord Voldemort, different little things like Riddle laughed a high, cold laugh that didn't suit him. It made the hair stand up on the back of Harry's neck. And this is something that is very different compared to the movies. Mm-hmm. It almost reminds me of the villain in Who Framed Roger Rabbit. You know how that's like something that is like the high-pitched like thing that just like
sticks. Wait, what's it like?
You know, I'm not going to relive that moment. That they're able to say, this evil character had this laugh that I just can't forget. And Voldemort has that. And another thing that happens is, well, said Riddle, smiling pleasantly, how is it that you, a skinny boy with no extraordinary magical talent, managed to defeat the greatest wizard of all time? How did you escape with nothing but a scar while Lord Voldemort's powers were destroyed? There was an odd red gleam in his hungry eyes now. And of course, in the books, Voldemort has red eyes. And so I just love how this handsome 16-year-old boy who we've gotten to know through this book and through this diary, and as Harry kind of trusts a little bit in the beginning of this chapter, not only do we find out that he's Lord Voldemort, but we see these qualities of his voice and his eyes that are going to forever haunt Harry and forever haunt us as a reader going forward.
Mm-hmm. I agree. And it even starts, Mary, in we talked about it originally, but I'm going to say it again here. A tall, black-haired boy was leaning against the nearest pillar, watching. He was strangely blurred around the edges, as though Harry was looking at him through a misted window. But there was no mistaking him. Tom? Tom Riddle? Riddle nodded, not taking his eyes off Harry's face. What do you mean she won't wake? Harry said desperately. She's not. Oh, she's still alive, said Riddle, but only just. Harry stared at him. Tom Riddle had been at Hogwarts 50 years ago, yet here he stood, a weird, misty light shining about him, not a day older than 16. I love this. Mm-hmm. I love this, because, again, this is character placement. It's so easy to say, like, oh, Tom was just walking towards Harry, or Tom was floating around the room. No, no, no. It's Tom Riddle, who we eventually know to be Lord Voldemort, is just casually leaning against this pillar.
Just
it's
chilling.
So much arrogance. There is no urgency. Mm-hmm. He is letting this scene unfold.
He's a cat, like waiting for the mouse to come in, you know, because he is the cat. He, or at least he thinks he is. He thinks he's the alpha.
Oh, absolutely.
Predator in this.
And I think for the most part, he is. I think he knows his power, and he knows, I mean, for the sheer simple fact that he is in fact there.
Mm-hmm.
He is there.
Mm-hmm.
The guy should have been gone, but he's not, because he has this ability, or had the ability, to split his soul, put himself into the diary, and now he is almost in corporeal form. I mean, he is there. And the subtle thing, too, of the blurred edges that he has around him. And as Ginny becomes weaker, the edges around him become a lot more crisp.
Yep.
They become a lot more clear. That, too, is such an excellent descriptor. I keep going back to this leaning against the column thing.
Yes.
Because it's just a subtle way of showing you the, you know what? It reminds me of the Garrison Commander.
It's always coming back to Outlander.
It comes back
right?
to Outlander.
Yes.
When Blackjack says, yes, we must protect the claret, or he goes and kicks the door with his boots because his boots are dirty.
Mm-hmm.
It just shows you the power that these people command without having to tell you. It just shows you.
Mm-hmm.
Truly amazing writing. Really, really amazing writing.
So he goes into, you know, while we're seeing this these beautiful descriptors, Tom Riddle is able to talk a little bit about how he was able to worm his way into Ginny Weasley, how he was able to do all these different things through her.
I got one other thing to say.
Yeah.
It says, Harry says, "You've got to help me, Tom," raising Ginny's head again. "We've got to get her out of here. There's a basilisk. I don't know where
it is. How do you say that?
Basilisk.
Oh, but you said basilisk.
I might have by accident. But it could be along any moment. Please, please help me." Riddle didn't move. Harry, sweating, managed to hoist Ginny half off the floor and bent to pick up his wand again. But his wand was gone. He looked up. Did you see? He looked up. Riddle was still watching him, twirling Harry's wand between his long fingers. "Thanks," said Harry, stretching out his hand for it. But a smile curled the corners of Riddle's mouth. He continued to stare at Harry, twirling the wand idly. Oh, yeah.
Right?
And that's
just cat and mouse.
Oh, that is awesome. Oh, that is awesome.
And
so
then Harry,
good.
Of course, picks up on it. "How did Ginny get like this?" he asked slowly.
Yep.
And he starts to say about, you know, she's been writing in it for months and how boring it is and how Ginny actually said, "It's like having a friend that I can carry around in my pocket." And this is when Riddle has that terrible laugh.
Mm-hmm.
She strangled the school roosters and daubed threatening messages on the wall. She set the Serpent of Slytherin on 4 mudbloods and the Squibs cat. So, you know, it's just when you read it and you realize that Ginny Weasley had to have muttered these words. Like, we know that she was possessed by Lord Voldemort and, you know, went through all this, but to know that she strangled the school's roosters.
Yeah, let's talk about Ginny here for a little bit.
Ginny. Ginny needs a trip.
Ginny needs all the melatonin and Doritos. there's a couple of things I think about Ginny that are both good and bad.
You can't put her down right now.
No, man. I'm not going to put
like
her down.
Dying.
The bad part, not about Ginny, but it's about the writing. Ginny is
11.
She's 11, sure. And you could, I think if you, it's not very hard to make this, you know, abusive relationship that Voldemort is having with Ginny. It's not hard to take a step into a direction that I definitely don't want to go in.
Thank you.
But the writer puts Ginny in a position where she falls into the trope of being a damsel. What do you think about that? Do you think that there is validity to that notion that Ginny is just reduced to a damsel in distress?
No.
How come?
You know, That's interesting. I didn't see it that way. I actually saw, I was reading this now as a mother of two kids, and we're in this social media age. And when that whole line that I just read about how it was like I was having a friend in my back pocket, it made me think about social media and how particularly young teens are preyed upon by like online predators.
Sure.
Through different social media outlets, you know, whether it's TikTok or different chats or whatever, and how it's like you get to have this friend in your back pocket who you can just talk to and get to know and like divulge your biggest secrets. It makes me think about when AOL first was created, and I think I was like in seventh grade or something, and how my friends and I would leave school and then go straight onto AIM Messenger and to AOL to share more secrets.
Sure.
And it's like from the even though you could just tell friends face to face, there's something about writing it which makes it a little bit feel a little bit more safe.
Yeah.
And that's how I felt, not necessarily damsel in distress, but just about how naive, sadly, as particularly that group, when you do finally have secrets, when you do finally have crushes, when you have these social pressures of like, people are teasing me, or so-and-so says that, you know, my brother says that I'm looking odd, and, you know, you have these concerns and you worry about what other people think of you. Mm-hmm. That all starts around that age, and you are easily influenced. And you like having those secret friends.
Sure.
And so that's how I saw it. Not damsel in distress, but an 11-year-old girl who thought she had a safe secret friend.
Mm-hmm. I think there's validity to
that. I just took it in a direction you were not expecting.
No. I expected
Chris Hansen.
I know.
With the cookies and the lemonade.
You want to have a seat? How about some cookies? You want some lemonade? Why don't you have a seat? And like the shocking thing about that show is that the people always sat down.
And they're like, okay.
That just makes sense.
Okay,
Chris, I'm going to sit down. Thanks, Chris Hansen, to catch a predator. The damsel part of it comes to my mind because of this passage. All the time he spoke, Riddle's eyes never left Harry's face. There was an almost hungry look in them. It's very boring having to listen to the silly little troubles of an 11-year-old girl, he went on. But I was patient. I wrote back. I was sympathetic. I was kind. Ginny simply loved me. No one's ever understood me like you, Tom. I'm so glad I've got this diary to confide in. I'm so glad I've got this. It's like having a friend I can carry around in my pocket. That to me just feels like a girl that is just going around looking for someone to validate her. And someone like Tom Riddle takes advantage of that and purposely puts her in that position. One other thing. The Ginny's function as like within Voldemort, like if Voldemort takes her over. Mm-hmm. What is Ginny's function? What about her specifically makes this important? What about her illuminates the story for her to get possessed?
The reason that she's important is she is the youngest Weasley. So the Weasley family has, for all intents and purposes, like adopted Harry. That is his new wizarding family.
Sure.
And so essentially, this is the youngest member of Harry's family who's now been attacked. Because it could have been anybody. It could have been, you know, Hannah Abbott.
It
could have been anybody.
Penelope Clearwater.
Yes. And I don't think...
Changes that?
The fact that it's Harry's adopted family.
And so that's why I wonder...
And someone that... I think we are already seeing signs that Harry is starting to have an inkling of a crush on Ginny, because Harry notices all these little things about Ginny.
Sure.
He notices that she puts her elbow accidentally in the butter. He notices that, you know, all these little things that the people are not noticing. So it's an object of Harry's affection, but it's also someone that he deeply cares about because this is his family.
And that's why I wonder if this is a damsel in distress type thing, because Ginny herself only functions as motivation for Harry, right? That's it.
Yeah, but Harry was already going to go and solve this even without Ginny. And there was Colin Creevely, and then there was Justin, there was Nicholas.
Sure.
So it wasn't like, oh, woe is me, I'm one person. There were multiple people.
Yep.
So I guess I'm feeling like, no, I think the author is really like pro-female, like you know, strong, sure. wouldn't want necessarily a damsel in distress. So I think if we didn't have the feelings that then grow stronger and the mutual appreciation that Ginny, not appreciation, but the fact that Ginny and Harry get to bond over the fact that they had this possession.
The one thing I will say, actually, that goes against what I'm saying here, that what the damsel in distress thing, the fact that, well, this is a conversation we had earlier.
Because Harry did it too. And Harry, like...
Well, I want to get to that in a minute.
Okay.
I definitely want to get to that in a minute. But we had a conversation. We had a conversation at the beginning of this, at the beginning of this particular season, or over this particular book. What was the, Dobby's warnings were specific to Harry, but why did Ginny end up with this book? Was it meant to be that Ginny ended up with this book? Was it by chance that, what's his name?
Lucius
gives her the book. What was the purpose? And how did Dobby's warnings illuminate that choice of Ginny getting the book? Was it on purpose or was it by chance?
You could argue both sides.
I think you can argue both sides. Having said that, let's just say for the sake of argument, it was by chance.
Yeah.
Sure. Which I think is the most, I think it's the most prudent choice, but let's just say that it is. Ginny starts pouring her heart into this diary, and it gives Tom more power. It gives him the ability to take her soul.
Yes.
And in doing so, he finds more about Harry. He understands that Ginny, who is in possession of this book, is within presence of Harry. And not only presence, but close presence. So is Ginny a damsel in distress because of that? I would say no, because he purposely manipulates her for the sake of getting to Harry. Like, and not only that, she eventually gets rid of the book.
Yes.
But she chooses to take it back in order to protect Harry.
Yeah.
That itself right there is a perfect indication that she is not a damsel in distress. Because these things to damsels just happen and they have no control over it. They just, things happen to them and that's that. And they are a function to just get the protagonist to do whatever the book needs them to do. But the simple fact that she got rid of the book and she could live her life and she can get away because she seemed like she knew what was happening. She knew that something was off. She knew that was something was wrong.
Yes. I mean, hey, you wake up and you've been strangling roosters and you've got pain all over you.
Right. She made the choice to physically get rid of it. And then she makes another choice to say, no, I can't let Harry go through the same thing that I did.
Mm-hmm.
That is someone who's taking control of their situation. Would you agree or disagree with that?
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
I do. Whew. Ginny. So all of this is going on and, you know, Lord Voldemort is like, I'm the greatest wizard ever. And Harry's like, no, you're not. Dumbledore is. And by him doing that, he proclaims this big trust and belief in Albus Dumbledore.
Sure.
And through that, Fox comes to Harry's rescue. And Fox comes with a song, which in the book, it's like just a screech.
Yes.
But it's interesting. So I looked a little bit into it. And according to Newt Scamander, the Song of the Phoenix gives strength and hope to those it sings for, increasing the courage of the pure heart and striking fear into the hearts of the impure.
Sure.
And believe it or not, in Goblet of Fire, the connection between the twin cores, because of course, Harry and Voldemort's wands have a tail feather from Fox the Phoenix. When in Goblet of Fire, they actually end up having some Phoenix song during the connection of their wands. So as we read Goblet of Fire, we'll be able to do that, which is pretty exciting.
Well, let's talk about Harry here a little bit. We just got done talking about the idea of Ginny being
not a damsel by chance, in distress, yes.
by chance getting the book, maybe being a damsel in distress, maybe not. I think there's an argument to be made either way. Whatever. So what? Stats are for nerds. What if Harry was the one that was in Ginny's place.
What if Harry had accidentally, or what if Lucius had put the book into Harry's cauldron?
Yeah, because I'm the one that will argue that I think the book was meant for Harry. If Lucius had a specific plan that Dobby was aware of, that Dobby said, you are in specific trouble, Harry. Like, I feel like there are conversations about Harry happening that Dobby hears from the Malfoys that gives him purpose to say, Harry's really in trouble. And that, to me, says Lucius has a plan to get the book to Harry's hands because he knows the power of the diary. He may not know the full extent of it, but he knows what is what.
Interesting.
He knows that there's a powerful intent about it.
See.
So what happens if Harry gets that diary? What if the real purpose was to get it in Harry's hands?
I don't think it was. I think it was to continue Voldemort's plan, which was Salazar Slytherin's plan, to rid the school of mudbloods. Mm-hmm. Of Muggleborn, I shouldn't swear, of Muggleborns mm-hmm. on from the school grounds. So I don't necessarily think he was going to target Harry. I think just Dobby knew all of these bad things were going to be happening, that the chamber would be opening, that there would be death, that there would be peril.
Sure.
You know, I think that Lucius just wanted to get it in there. Maybe if it was with Harry, great. Maybe if it was just with any girl who may be writing in a diary, great. You know, it'd be awesome is if I could kill two birds with one stone and give it to like one of my arch nemesis's kids. Mm-hmm. So I think it was very, very lucky that it ended up with Ginny. You know, he had that little brawl, which we did not see very characteristically of Lucius right. and Arthur inside Flourish and Blotts.
Right.
So one could say that he thought, this is my opportunity. I'm close to a kid's cauldron. I can do this. You know, 11-year-old girls might like to write in diaries. So for me, I don't think he was targeting Harry as... It wasn't until Ginny wrote in the diary that Tom Riddle knew that he was defeated, that Harry Potter existed. Like, Tom Riddle was just 16-year-old Tom Riddle in this book. My one sole purpose is to rid the school of mudbloods.
Sure.
So that's at least what we gather from this. So to me, it's not like Lucius Malfoy was writing it being like, okay, Tom, where do you want me to go from here? Like, mm-hmm. I don't think Lucius Malfoy wrote in the diary. I don't think he got direct... instructions from the diary to go get Harry Potter. I don't think Voldemort, when he gave it to Lucius Malfoy, didn't know that he truly was going to be defeated by a little baby Harry Potter.
Sure.
So I think Lucius was just told, here's a book, it needs to get back to Hogwarts, it'll get rid of the Muggles, Muggleborn.
Okay. And Jackie here on Facebook says Lucius could have purposely put it in Ginny's cauldron as part of him trying to get back at Arthur too. Two birds, one stone. Definitely a possibility. Do I believe that Lucius is capable of doing that? Abso-frackin-lutely. In fact, that's probably the best argument you could make, that it is in fact meant for Ginny just to get back at Lucius. But again, let's just ask the question. What happens if this is Harry in Ginny's place? My suggestion is that there it would have been, I think, a lot more... Because we have that brief snippet of Harry talking to Tom.
Can Harry be possessed by Tom Riddle since Harry is already a Horcrux? Can he be possessed by that version of Tom Riddle?
No, but perhaps. I don't think there's enough textual evidence to suggest that he either could or could not.
I mean, he gets possessed by Voldemort later.
But what you can't... Yeah. So I'd probably
could
say
you imagine?
Right. Well, at the very least...
Talking all sorts of parcel talk.
Tom could influence Harry in ways... like, we just got done watching the Amityville Horror, and... In that film, we watched the Ryan Reynolds version, which is not great, but it's okay. It's worthy of watching. In that film, Ryan Reynolds is influenced by something, and it's making choices. This force is guiding Ryan Reynolds to do certain things, just like what it did for Ronnie DeFeo in the movie, had to go kill his family. Do you sense that Riddle was going down that road with Harry? In the same way, do you sense that like Riddle could influence Harry's decisions? Go kill the roosters. Go do.
You're saying
things.
If Harry had the books, could he have been influenced
the same way that Ginny was? And if that's the case, how is that? Yes. Does that make a more interesting story than Ginny being affected and not Harry?
It would have been the most confusing story ever, Blake. It would just be like, I'm at Quidditch practice. Whoa! I woke up 2 days later. What just happened? Like, it would... No.
Yeah, it would...
I like this because it's Harry having to be brave. It's Harry trying to solve this the entire time.
Yes.
So I'm happy that Harry didn't get the book.
Yeah, Harry is going in there and... Like he did in Aragog's, in the chapter with Aragog.
I think it's why, though, Harry was so interested in this sopping wet, but not really wet book that would write back to him. Harry is drawn to Horcruxes. He is a Horcrux. He can kind of like sense them, mm-hmm. you know, as we find out in later books. He is affected when he wears the locket, you know, so the Horcruxes definitely have an effect on Harry. And I think that that's part of the reason why he does write so much and is fine just like jumping within the pages and going down this, because there's something that feels not right, but mm-hmm. familiar to him, sure. you know? So I would agree. If he had gotten the book, I think Harry could have been possessed. I think Harry could have done this all, but it would have made for a very weird story.
It probably would have been very weird, but it probably would have been weird for an older audience. And like, let's get weirder for it. Let's just get weird. Let's just get weird with it. And I think it would have been a better story for an older audience, as opposed to this book is meant for kids. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, but then we wouldn't trust Harry's judgment like ever again. And we already have difficulty trusting his judgment
That's a good point. I mean, either way, I think it's interesting because...
I think Ron would have talked him out of it. I think Ginny wasn't telling anybody. Okay, this is why Ginny divulged into it. Ginny doesn't have any friends yet. She's not close with Neville yet. She's not really like in the, you know, Dumbledore's army. But Harry has Hermione and Ron. And even they know about the diary. Mm-hmm. And then when Harry has the book, the Half-Blood Prince book, he tells them and they know about it. I don't think Ron and Hermione would have let this happen as much as it did.
Yeah, the fact that Hermione has been, you know, out of the story now for a few chapters is a little bit problematic.
But Ron knows about bad books.
Yeah, that's true.
So I think Ron would have been like, bro, you've been crazy. You're covered in paint.
What are you doing?
Why are there rooster feathers all over you? You're the one doing this.
Well, I mean, either way, I think that's a fun exercise to talk about. But either way, I love the fact that it's Harry who uses loyalty to help in love and friendship to defeat Tom Riddle. Whereas Tom, I love this part when he says, so I made Ginny, oh no, wait, hold on one second. Where am I here? Where am I?
I don't know.
He's talking about how he, I think Lumos messed up my here it is. If I say so, say it myself, Harry. I've always been able to charm the people I needed. And then he goes on to talk about how he framed Hagrid. He says, it was my word against Hagrid's, Harry. Well, you can imagine how it looked to old Armando Dippet. On the one hand, Tom Riddle, poor but brilliant, parentless but so brave, school prefect, model student. On the other hand, big, blundering Hagrid, in trouble every other week, trying to raise werewolf cubs under his bed, sneaking off to the Forbidden Forest to wrestle trolls. Tom is crafting his own image. He is making something that he thinks is the perfect student. And Harry is just there, and he's doing the best that he can, and he's doing things for friendship as opposed to doing things for evil purposes. Mm. Again, two similar goals, but two completely different ways of getting there.
It's interesting to see Tom talk about himself in such a boastful manner when we've had these similar experiences all book long, but from Gilderoy Lockhart, yet another adult who we are conditioned to, that we're supposed to be believing and supposed to be trusting, but who actually is false, you know? So it's just showing you that these egos and acting out of just selfishness really isn't getting you anywhere inside the Potterverse.
Sure.
That it is. It's the loyalty. It's the selflessness.
What do you think about Fox showing up?
Fox.
And my next question after that is loyalty.
Okay.
That feels like a Hufflepuff trait, not Gryffindor. Fox is showing up because of Harry's loyalty to Dumbledore.
Yes.
Dumbledore is not as gone as you may think he is. Harry just says it out of nowhere. What do you think about the Hufflepuff trait being the one that brings Fox out, and two, the actual presence of Fox Is this another thing that lends you to believe that Harry is incapable of his own, like he is not warranting his own fame, that Fox is essentially is a deus ex machina, that he just shows up. He just shows up and just saves the day and does everything for Harry, and Harry just happens to be the one that's in the right position.
Oh, well, that's just fortunate. Ta-da. Easy button.
Right, that's what I'm saying. Fox is the easy button.
But once again, it was laid out for us. You know, we heard that the tears and all these kind of things, we heard about all this earlier in the book. So it was already put there, all right? We can't help it that the solutions were already placed in the book. I don't know. I'm down with Fox. What's your problem with Fox?
Because he actually does everything. He's the one.
What's your loyalty? That's the question I have. The loyalty problem?
Yeah.
So I think everyone can be loyal to their own house. You know what I mean? Like, Slytherins are proud and they are loyal to their house. Snape is loyal to his house and he makes sure that he gives extra points to people on his house.
I don't think that's loyalty. I think that's self-serving.
Okay.
Because, you know, Snape giving extra points to Slytherin makes...
Then what about...
Brings him glory. Brings House Slytherin, you know, the house cup. That's self-serving.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
I don't really think I understand the loyalty question.
Well...
You're going down a route that I'm not following. So if you want to keep going into it.
Well, it just doesn't make sense. Like,
I think my head is still reeling from imagining a reality where Harry had the diary.
Oh, I think that would have been great.
I know, but my head's spinning and I just want to like get back to the reality of this chapter.
Yeah, right. This is a reality. Actually, Mo Whitman here on Facebook says something that's really important. Loyalty takes bravery. There's some overlap there.
True that.
I don't know if I buy that 100%.
Harry's standing up to Lord Voldemort saying, you are not the greatest wizard. When Lord Voldemort has his wand and he's about to set a big basilisk on him and he's like, no, actually you're not the greatest wizard. You're just ugly and friendless. And by the way, I defeated you when I was a baby. Mic drop. That's pretty brave.
Fair.
Thank you.
Fair. But it's just loyalty to Dumbledore.
Yes.
I don't know. Well, doesn't matter. I feel like Fox does everything for Harry. Fox is the one that brings the sword of Gryffindor. Fox is the one that plucks out the basilisk's eyes. Fox is the one that heals Harry.
It's like me and our relationship when it comes to holidays.
What do you mean?
I do everything in the holidays. Okay?
Well, that's not true. You don't do everything.
Pretty much. Okay? I'm like Fox. All right?
Right.
But get the job done.
But reality is not
excuse. Pick everybody up. Save the kids. You're welcome. Now I'm going to go burst into flames and take a tub. Maybe eat some Doritos.
Take a tub.
Oh, that's what Fox did after this. You know that she was peace out, Cub Scouts.
Yeah, absolutely.
I need to go fluff my feathers and treat myself.
I need a mask. Can I have a mask?
In-home spa night.
Oh, my goodness.
Let's move on from Fox. I feel like you're getting negative on
No, I'm
Fox.
Not getting negative. Actually, I wanted to know your opinion about Fox just showing up out of nowhere and then kind of saving the day.
I think it's fine.
I do like the fact that that Riddle is so preoccupied with the idea that Harry just... It was luck. He says a bunch of times... he says something along the lines of like, listen, after all this stuff, after everything that's happened, the good news is that it was just chance. Oh, here it is. Riddle's face contorted. Then he forced it into an awful smile. So your mother died to save you. Yes, that's a powerful counter charm. I can see now. There's nothing special about you after all. I wondered, you see, because there are strange likenesses between us, Harry Potter. Even you must have noticed, both half-bloods, orphans raised by muggles, probably the only two Parselmouths to come to Hogwarts since the great Slytherin himself. We even look something alike. But after all, it was merely a lucky chance that saved you from me. That's all I wanted to know. The ironic thing here is that Riddle needs validation, which I did not expect. This is the same guy that came into the room all proud of himself, leaning against the pillar. Yet here he is looking for answers from Harry. All of this has led to this moment. What do you think about that? And not only is... I'm trying to make the distinction. Not only is Riddle's purpose just trying to find out that if Harry was special or not, he so believes it, but in doing so, he doesn't recognize, or maybe he can't recognize, that Harry is there because of love. It's not simply by chance that Harry beat him, even though maybe he wants to believe that. It was a choice. It was a choice that Lily made. Maybe it's not, maybe Harry's not special for that choice, but it's not just chance. It's something that is inherently innate in Harry's character. What do you think about that?
Interesting.
Thanks, Mary. Great one. Good job. Appreciate that. Good job. Great conversation. Fine. Fine. No problem. We won't have to discuss
no,
that.
No, it's interesting. Next point.
No, that's it. Go ahead.
That's all. You're done with the chapter?
No, I'm not done with the chapter. You go ahead. You continue on.
I'm still ready for you just to tear this book that I love apart.
I'm actually praising it. Okay. I love the fact that there's a distinction there.
Still upset about Fox, I guess.
That Riddle can't see that distinction, and he has to validate himself, and he has to use Harry to do so.
Yes.
I think that's awesome. I think that is so well written, and it is, again, it's the same goal, just different ways of going about it, and they are complete protagonist-antagonist relationship, and it is a well-written function of what is happening here, and that's why, even though it is so talky, it works. Mm. It works so well.
Agreed.
What do you think about the Sorting Hat's presence in the story?
I love it.
I kind of like it too.
I love that you love that, but you don't love Fox. Fox is the one that brought that.
Yeah, but Fox shows up out of nowhere. But I think the Sorting Hat has a specific function, which is it reminds Harry, because it contains the Sword of Gryffindor, that Harry is, in fact, a true Gryffindor. That even though the Sorting Hat said one thing, Dumbledore sends it as a message. Because remember, they have that conversation. I was just asking the Sorting Hat, like, you know, if I was really a Gryffindor, and Dumbledore himself, I think, validates that when the Sword of Gryffindor shows up. What do you think?
No, I agree. I think, you know, we've been able to spend all this time with the Sorting Hat. Yeah, Harry had that conversation with it before, and we're getting all of this, like, just Gryffindor vibes, man. He gets the sword, he stands up for Dumbledore, he's there alone, little 12-year-old Harry Potter, like, searching for Ginny, knowing he's going to be facing a major basilisk. I just love it. I'm just having, you know what it is? Can I just be real with you?
Yes.
If Fox didn't come, and Harry died, would the Horcrux and Harry have also died? And then would Harry have the choice to come back to life again?
That's a great question. The Horcrux definitely would have died, though.
Or why didn't the basilisk venom kill the Horcrux part of Harry?
That's a good question. My argument to that would be Harry. Because he didn't die, number one. But also, Harry started to feel like he was dying. Remember? Mm-hmm. But then Fox shows up and gives him the tears.
Yeah.
So, vents the venom from dying. And also, remember, in the final book, in the final film, let's just say, the Horcrux dies because Harry chooses to die. Harry welcomes death with open arms. And that allows the Horcrux to be the thing that is targeted by the killing curse. Not necessarily Harry, because he chooses to die for his friends and be brave, and for his family, and be brave, Harry then has a choice to go back.
Yep.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I think that's probably where that that's coming from. Mm-hmm. That's my guess.
I dig it.
I like the fact, too, that Voldemort takes Harry's wand. I know we talked about how the wands, both of their wands, share
a feather from Fox.
Yeah, and
so cool.
It's not by mistake that Fox is there, and that Fox is the one.
So
that...
you're going to slow down your Fox hate? Thanks.
I think it's fitting that Riddle takes Harry's wand and twiddles it in his fingers and potentially uses it, because as we all know, the wand chooses the wizard, right? It's something.
If Harry had died, Voldemort wouldn't have even come back.
Why do you say that?
Because he needed Harry's blood in the Goblet of Fire.
No, but you see that that Riddle is gaining more power. In effect, if Harry had not stopped not stopped Riddle in this book, Riddle would have taken real form because of Ginny. Riddle would have been alive. He would have
been
back.
Two Voldies. Oh man!
No, I don't think there would have been. That would have been him.
Sucked into him.
That would have been it.
Wow!
Think about that.
Okay.
I don't know. I think there's something special to the fact that Voldemort has Harry's wand.
It's the brother wand.
It's the brother wand.
Yeah.
And the wand chooses the wizard.
And knowing that he held it when in latter books, it becomes such a big issue that Harry and Voldemort's wands are, you know, have this special linked core, and that Voldemort can't necessarily defeat Harry because of this wand issue. And yet a version of Voldemort had Harry's wand in his hands. He could have just easily snapped it in two, like Ron's was broken.
Right, right. Anything else from this chapter that you want to talk about, nope. Mavin?
Fox saves the day.
Fox does save the day.
Flies everybody out. We got Gilderoy Lockhart just being a mumbling, bumbling baboon. Ginny, of course, you know, is really, really nervous about what's going to happen. And we're good. We're good. We're golden. We get out of the chamber.
I know you feel like I didn't like this chapter. I actually quite liked it. It was one of the chapters. I think this actually might be my favorite chapter in the book, just because Tom Riddle is different than Voldemort to me. I think there's a big distinction there. Voldemort is nothing but evil, but Tom Riddle is different.
No, honey, no.
You don't think so?
No. Tom Riddle is pure evil. Tom Riddle killed Moaning Myrtle because she was muggle-born. Tom Riddle framed my favorite character in the series, Hagrid. All done with him. All done with this jabroni. What do you think is even good? See, this is the Slytherin part of you.
I don't think it's good. I just think it's...
He's evil.
It's Black Jack Randall.
He already knew how to do Horcruxes. This has been his plan. He literally just opened the Chamber of Secrets at the age of 16 to kill Mudbloods, not just Moaning Myrtle, but to kill them all. No, Blake.
Yeah, but that changes, though.
No,
that changes. He says it, right out.
Oh, it changes because he thinks once I kill Harry, I can do anything I want because I'm already gonna get back to my full body, and then I can kill all the Mudbloods and I can do what I want.
Well, I don't know. I'm not sure if that's the case. Because he says killing Mudbloods isn't important to me anymore.
Well, yeah, because he wants to kill Harry first. And then he can just be the biggest ruler. It's like, I'll deal with that stuff later. But if this person, you know, ruins the future me, I need to get rid of him first. Then I can carry
on. Jennifer Dominic says here, Tom Riddle is perfecting the evil that will become Voldemort. Ooh. What do you think about that, Mary?
I mean, I'm just not down with him at all. In either way, I would not want to go and have coffee with him. I mean, I don't even drink regular coffee right now. I don't know. Are you asking me to like him?
No, I'm not asking you to like him. I'm trying to make a distinction between the two characters.
Voldemort. So Tom Riddle split his soul once by this point.
Yes.
Okay. So the only Horcrux he had made. Hold up.
No, the first Horcrux he made.
Was the ring?
It wasn't the ring. It was the diary.
So he has the diary. When does he kill his family to create more Horcruxes for the ring, the locket? He kills his grandparents.
That's true.
So
actually, I saw a great.
And then he goes and he makes more Horcruxes. So I, how about this? Tom Riddle has only had his soul split a couple of times by this point. Voldemort has split his soul many more times. Okay, so that's why he's more evil, because he's lesser of a person.
I saw a great graphic. And the reason why I know that the diary was the first Horcrux was in the graphic. It shows like a pie chart. And we all know that each time you make a Horcrux, you split your soul in half.
Yes.
Which makes, when I saw this graphic, the graphic has the pie chart. Half of the chart of his soul goes to the diary. That makes me feel terribly bad for Ginny, right? Because she gets the full, well, half of the full effect of Tom Riddle and Voldemort in her presence with the diary. But then it shows all his parts of his soul being split in half after that. So the locket has half of like an eighth. It has
it goes this diary of Tom Riddle after he killed Moaning Myrtle. Then it was the Peveril ring following the death of Tom Riddle Sr. and Tom Riddle's grandparents. So he killed all of them.
Yeah. So then
like right away.
So then that would be 25%.
And then the Hufflepuff cup when he killed Hepzibah Smith.
So that would be 13%, 12.5%.
Then it was the Slytherin locket following the murder of a Muggle tramp.
And then that would be 6.5%.
Then it was the Ravenclaw diadem,
which would be 3%.
Following the murder of an Albanian peasant. Oh, no. Then it was Nagini following the murder of Ministry Magic employee Berthard Jorkins.
Nagini has a very small portion of Riddle's or Voldemort's soul. So what I'm saying is, when you look at it from that perspective, Ginny being possessed by this thing or influenced or whatever, that's some stuff.
That's some serious Horcrux mojo.
So later on, when she tells Harry, like, listen, you're not alone in this. Like, she doesn't specifically say it, but I think she alludes to it. I think it was in Half-Blood Prince, where she kind of acknowledges the fact that Harry is fighting these things, but she's like, listen, you're not 100% alone. That is something that, as we talked about, Mary, that is definitely not pulled on enough in this series. Do you think?
We will find out as we read deeply into it, as we continue on in the Potterverse.
Yes. So, anything else you want to talk about? All right, good. Very good. Well, it's time to get in a different perspective, Marvin.
Okay.
What do we got?
Well, this area of the Potterverse is brought to you by Minute with Mary. How long have you had your mascara, ladies and gents? Because if you've had it since the summer, you are due for a refill. We want to make sure that your lashes look lovely for all of 2021. So you can head on over to MinuteWithMary.com, but I do want to remind you that this month, the month of November, I'm running for a most massive promotion. So if you've ever wanted to try out any of my makeup or my skincare, I would love to hook you up. You can, of course, learn more by searching the hashtag MinuteWithMary or by going to MinuteWithMary.com.
Ready to get in a different perspective?
Yes.
Let's do it.
Holy cricket! You're Harry Potter! I'm Hermione Granger. And you are?
All right, I think I'll take this one.
Yeah.
I think I'll take this one. I am going to be... Who do I want to be, Mary?
Fox. I challenge you to be Fox.
All right, you know what? Here I am. I'm hanging out.
You're preening, probably.
Maybe I'll get a mask on.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, Dumbledore just chimes in and is like, hey, Fox, go do me a favor. Man, come on. I had my spa day going. I know I just came back to life. I know that's going to be... It takes a lot to keep this skin from burning, okay? It takes a lot. I need all the moisturizer.
Yes, a good hydrating mask.
So much hydration is needed here. I get very dry very quickly, okay? Very dry. And I know my tears have healing powers, but apparently they don't heal my own skin, which is a problem for me.
Yes.
But then, listen, I'm the man. I just show up and I fix things. That's my job. I just fix it. And not only do I fix it, I use the healing powers from my eyes that can't heal my skin that heals Harry Frackin' Potter. Harry Freakin' Potter. That's right.
I'm Harry Freakin' Potter.
Yeah, yeah, he's so special. He needs me to show up and take care of his business for him.
You're welcome.
You're welcome, Harry. What's the big deal about this kid, Harry?
You know what, Fox?
What?
This book should just be renamed Fox Saves the World.
Yeah, it's about me. Without me, Harry's croaked.
Without you, Harry can't get back out of the chamber.
Yeah,
he'd just be
stuck there. He'd just be stuck there. Not only do I got to save you, but I got to take you. I got to take you and your friend and your friend's sister and this jabroni, whatever his name is.
Lockhart.
Sure, I got to take him too. That's four people hanging on to my leg.
It's like a minivan. Oh, you want to come home from soccer practice
too?
Get
right in. Might as well.
All right.
Have some fun with it. It's all because of me. Fox saves the day. That's what this book should be called. I don't care about Harry Potter and the Chamber of Secrets. Fox saves the day.
Oh, my goodness. Well, on that note, Fox, thanks for coming.
You're welcome. I'll be back in my room with my hydrating mask.
For now, it's time for emails and questions.
Oh, Miles here.
Well, ladies and gents, this is the time where you get a chance to ask us any questions that you'd like if you're on the live. Please, if you have a question for anything that you want us to talk about, put a
lightning bolt emoji in the comments.
And we will recognize it as a question or something that you want to chat about. If you are listening to this on the podcast app, trust me, you are not alone. It is okay. You can ask us any question that you want, and we will get to it next episode. In particular, the mailbag episode that will be happening after the next chapter, which is Dobby's Reward. So if you want to save it for that one too, that's totally okay. We're here for you. We're ready to talk. We're ready to have some fun with Harry Potter. We didn't have any emails in this chapter, but we do have some questions already in the live chat. Mary, why don't you go ahead and start with the first one?
Let's see. Rebecca Ann says, which Horcrux do you think took Voldy's nose?
That's a good one. That's
Harry.
A good one. It's got to be Harry. Yeah, totally took Harry's
she also
nose.
Says, do you think in an alternative universe that Riddle and Harry would have been friends? Like Riddle is a defense against the dark arts teacher and he teaches spells like Lupin.
Absolutely. And that's the whole idea.
It's all about the choices we make.
It's all about the choices that we make. And let's just say that Voldemort or Riddle is not the greatest wizard of all time. The arrogance would suggest that, you know, he thinks that he is, but let's just say that he isn't. There's so many similarities between the two that, yes, they could absolutely relate to each other. Although, here's the question. Let's say, for the sake of argument, Riddle does not become Voldemort. Riddle does not kill Lily.
Okay.
Does not do the things that
my brain.
He creates. That means Harry does not have the Horcrux in him.
Correct.
That also means Harry more than likely cannot speak Parseltongue.
Yeah, he can't.
Are all those similarities now null and void? Is Voldemort creating Harry
no
the thing that sets
orphan.
Them on the path together?
Yes. Voldemort chose and created Harry.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, because Harry, all of his similarities, aside from his dark hair, would have been gone.
Yeah, for the most part, I think I would agree with you. Because Harry would have had a family, you're mm-hmm. right. He would have grown up in what I would imagine a relatively decent household. That's another thing that I have a question about too. Ginny's experience with Hogwarts. I can't help but compare the situation between Ginny and Harry. Because Ginny is the one who gets possessed or influenced by Voldemort mm-hmm. or Tom Riddle. Yet Harry shares all the similarities with Tom Riddle. I just find it...
It's an interesting pair. I'm glad they end up together.
Yeah, I find it very tactile, this comparison. Because, you know, Ginny grows up in what would you would assume to be a relatively well-adjusted family life.
Yep.
And she goes into Hogwarts because it's a thing that she has to do.
She's excited about it, though.
Right. And yet... She is alone in many ways, the same way that Harry was alone. But Harry is just a different person. He mm-hmm. grew up in a totally toxic family and is going there because it's special. It's something that he discovers about himself. It's not like the next thing. You know how like when you go from middle school to high school, it's the next thing. You have to do it. That's the way I feel like it is with Ginny. Like it's the next thing. She goes
excited,
to Hogwarts.
Though. She's very excited. She even says that she's been excited to go to Hogwarts ever since Bill went.
Sure. But she goes and she ends up, I guess the experiences are relatively similar, yet different in the ways that they get there. And I can't help but just compare the two. I think it's just a cool comparison.
Okay.
When you look at it like that. What was I saying? What was I talking about?
I don't really know.
I can't remember. Hillary says, why didn't the basilisk venom kill Harry immediately since he was a Horcrux? Mary, we already kind of went over this, but why don't you provide another answer?
Yeah, I think that the basilisk venom was working very quickly, so I think it would have killed him had Fox not cried on it, but I don't think necessarily him being a Horcrux has anything to do with his rate of death.
Good one.
Where's Harry on the Horcrux list? Harry, I believe, is the last Horcrux, Susan.
Yes, yes. And so that's the thing. Ginny, I think that's what I was getting at. Ginny has this full force of, well, at least half of the full force of Voldemort. Yet Harry has this one little sliver, like 1% of Voldemort's soul, because he keeps splitting himself in half.
Mm-hmm.
So you could argue that she has a much more damaging experience than Harry does, because of the full half force of.
I don't feel that way.
No, okay, fair enough.
Harry's been a Horcrux his entire life, and Ginny just has to deal with it for 1 year.
Suzanne says, each antagonist of each book a part of Voldemort. I don't understand that question.
And then Jackie asks, what do you think happened to Dobby? We haven't heard from him for ages. I think he's running lots of errands for Malfoy, trying to sell things at Borgin and Burke's.
That's true. And you wonder how much he's able to get out.
And Harry made him promise, like, please promise not to... Oh, no, that's at the end of this.
Yes, that's at the end. Yep.
Last, Jane Baker says, how does Tom Riddle become somewhat corporal in the Chamber of Secrets, feeding off of Ginny, when he will need Harry's blood later in the Goblet of Fire?
Well, he needs Harry's blood later in the Goblet of Fire because this version of him, the Tom Riddle version, the 16-year-old version of him, eventually when Harry... I love that also, too. When Harry just stabs the thing. I love that. Oh, my goodness gracious. It's written, for a split second, both Harry and Riddle, wand still raised, stared at it. Then, without thinking, without considering, as though he had meant it to do it all along, Harry seized the basilisk fang on the floor next to him and plunged it straight into the heart of the book. There was a long, dreadful, piercing scream. Ink spurted out of the diary in the torrents, streaming over Harry's hands, flooding the floor. Riddle was writhing and twisting, screaming and flailing, and then he had gone. Harry's wand fell to the floor with a clatter, and there was silence. Silence except for the steady drip, drip of ink still oozing from the diary. The basilisk venom had burned a sizzling hole right through it. Oh my God, I love how that is written. Of course,
so
the ink being blood and the whole thing, you know, a lot of crap. That version of Voldemort's soul is now gone.
Mm-hmm.
So him taking Ginny's soul, her, let's just call it, for the lack of a better term, life force. Him taking her life force is what gives him life. She pours so much of herself, so much of her soul, so much of her being into that. Diary that it allows him to be who he is.
Mm-hmm.
He then needs Harry's blood later on because that version of himself needs something of Harry to exist.
Hmm.
See what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Kind
good.
Of.
Okay.
On that note.
Well, we got some more. Caitlin, do you think if Draco had been the one to have the diary, Voldemort would have still tried to steal his soul? That being the reason why Lucius gave the diary to Ginny and not Draco. Mary, great question. What do you think?
Yes. He was like, this is not going near my kid.
That brings into question how much Lucius actually knew going into this.
I think he knew that it could open the Chamber of Secrets.
Hmm. Yeah, so do you think he knows that?
Because Draco says, my dad told me that about the Chamber of Secrets, but he doesn't tell me specifics.
Sure, so then that asks the question. Does Lucius know that the diary has the power to take somebody's life force?
I don't think he knows that.
I don't think he knows that either. So
I think he was just told, please get this back to Hogwarts.
Sure, sure. Let's see. Do you think Harry and Ginny would have sparked without this occurrence?
Yes.
No.
Oh. I don't know if it would have been like as deep, But she already had a hankering for a hunk of him, and he already was noticing things about her.
Yeah, but there's nothing textual to suggest, in this book at least, that Harry has any kind of affection.
They're still so young. I just think that Ginny grows into be a very strong and independent woman who doesn't necessarily, like, I don't know. I think they're a fine pair. I know that there is some Harry-Ginny hate, but I think they're a fine pair, book-wise.
I don't think, because this set of events, I think, catalyzes an awareness for each other. Yeah. And I don't know, without this experience, that they're together. Mm-hmm. Let's see. Last one here, I think. Suzanne says, Lockhart has Riddle qualities. First book, Quirrell is two-faced. What do you think, Lockhart? He has Riddle qualities? I mean, he does do these awful things.
No, like we were saying, like how they were boasting. You know what I mean? Yeah, how they're boasting and thinking very highly of themselves. So.
I think it's also fitting that his memory charm goes back on him and he loses all sense of his own identity, mm-hmm. just the way that he did to everybody else.
Yeah.
Okay, that's it. That's all we got for now. All ready right. to close out this episode, yes. Marvin? All right, let's do it.
Ladies and gents, as we carry on and finish up the Chamber of Secrets, we would love for you to be able to recommend this show to a friend of yours. Whether you know someone who also enjoys Harry Potter, or you can share it on your stories or your wall, sharing about the Potterverse helps us grow the nerd clan.
Yes.
Grow more people into knowing about the podcast. And if you've already done that, or if you can't do that for one reason or another thing you can do is leave us a 5-star rating and review.
Well, any stars that you think would fit the
appropriately. I think 5 stars is great.
I think so too, but somebody may think this is a 4 show, and that's worthy.
Sure. No. but if you leave us a review in your podcast app of choice, that would be greatly appreciated. And I will tell you that iTunes is like the creme de la creme when it comes to where you can leave podcast
Apple
reviews.
Podcasts.
Apple
Sorry.
Podcasts. Sorry, I'm so old school. It's like saying the Facebook. So if you do belong to a different podcast subscription service and you leave us a written review and rating there, thank you so much.
Or go to Facebook, the Mary and Blake Facebook, and leave us a written review there too.
Yes,
That also helps us out as well.
Just know that all of those are ways for you to give back and to let us know that you enjoy this. So for now, my name's Mary.
My name is Blake.
Mischief managed.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
You love podcasts, the stories, the laughs, the unexpected turns. But when this episode ends, the silence starts. Not anymore. Audiobooks.com turns that silence into your next great adventure. With over 450,000 titles, from bestsellers to hidden gems, your love for listening just found its new best friend. And because you already know the joy of audio, we're giving you 3 free audiobooks to start your journey. Imagine your favorite podcast, now with unlimited episodes. That's audiobooks.com. Keep the story going. Sign up for your free trial at audiobooks.com/podcast-free today. Because for podcast lovers like you, the end of an episode is just the beginning. That's audiobooks.com/podcast-free.